The resistance to change will always be here. I feel like it's just how you navigate that and doing it with compassion, empathy, and patience. You really have to understand the old school way of doing it. People, you know, shifting from word perfect to word with a big challenge. People shifting from drafting a letter on a piece of paper and mailing it to an email was a big challenge. I mean, those sound so small looking back, but there were really impacts and disruptors in the industry that we had to overcome.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Modern Business Operations. I'm your host, Seth Colliner, and I'm here today with Nicole Teneo, who is the Legal Technology Advisor and Services Manager, U.S. for Quinn Emanuel. Nicole, thanks for being here. And why don't we start by just having you just share a bit about your background and your current role?
So I've been in the legal industry for about over 25 years. I started as a trial technician, so working in the courtrooms, whether that be demonstratives and or wiring courtrooms before they were wired. And then I moved over into the e-discovery space, so really consulting with clients and with attorneys on best practices for e-discovery, whether that be data identification, collection methodologies, preservation, and different aspects like that. Around 2008 is when I really kind of tripled into the legal automation space. I was really excited about it. It's something that is just kind of one of my jives and fun things to do. So I was doing both kind of an e-discovery and legal automation role, and it's still my passion and what I love to do today. So currently at Quinn Emanuel, I am the Legal Technology Advisory Services Manager in the U.S. We work a lot, again, with advising attorneys on e-discovery, best practices, data processing, data productions, not only within the U.S., but on a global footprint as well.
Right. Well, and so the automation part is what I'm most fascinated about for the purposes of this conversation, because in a previous conversation, you talked about how you first started automating things back in 2008, which doesn't seem like a long time ago, but it was actually quite a long time ago, turns out. The tech landscape has changed pretty dramatically since then. So back then, when you first started automating things, like how did you even approach it?
When we started automating things, it was just, we approached with the need of having a crazy amount of data points and trying to understand them, make them relational and make them presentable in such a way that the client or the attorney can consume that information. And what we were finding is that a lot of it was just time consuming. Data entry, there was room for error. And if we automated that process, we were able to come up with a more cost-effective and efficient result. So that's kind of where it started, was finding the need of how can we do this more efficiently? And then it was really identifying what the tools were in order to help us in that process.
Well, and so with those tools, I mean, because the tools we have today just simply didn't exist, you know, 16 years ago. So, you know, how did you mess with the tools that were available? I mean, how did you make those work?
We kind of fake it till we make it, right? Microsoft has the product SharePoint. And back then, it was really kind of out of the box relational database, but they did have some customized workflows that enabled us to push information or data from one point to another and also notify specific parties. So we were able to automate some of those. And as the tool developed over time, we became more creative. As I shifted to another law firm, we had an in-house custom dev team. And they were able to kind of break the system to make it to do even more powerful actions that we weren't able to do out of the box. And so that was fun. It was very creative. And with that dev team, we extended our services by creating custom solutions by utilizing custom code. Again, back then, we didn't have the no code, low code tools that and solutions that we have today that are very fun and exciting. But it was also cool back then to do it from scratch because you're really the designer of the application, right? You're understanding what the logic is, what the process is, and what the flow should be, what the beginning trigger and the endpoint is. So it was a lot of fun working through that with the dev team because I learned a lot having to scale back and really understand the logic and the kind of cause and effect of doing certain things.
Yeah, that's such a great answer and fascinating because, you know, of course, things have changed so dramatically since then. So, you know, just tell us a little bit just from your perspective, how has automation changed and evolved since that time to where we are now?
Say that it's the same process, but new technology. Again, where we started and just understanding, you know, who are the parties, who are the players, what are the requirements, doing the requirements gathering. that's still a priority in automated workflows today. And that's really important. And I feel like people sometimes will purchase a platform or purchase a tool, develop an easy workflow, but you're missing the main component. And this is what everyone should always come back to, is really understand who is impacted by the process, what are the steps involved in that, who are the players involved, and to make sure that you're getting input all around from all of those people. And then also make sure that you're designing a workflow that is both ethical, that meets all the legal requirements, and that's sustainable going forward as well. So it's, again, it's the same process that should be applied either the old school way or what's happening now. It's just you get to do it in a more fun and easier fashion.
Well, and it's interesting too, because anytime there's new technology, people get spooked about, you know, losing jobs, losing roles, and that kind of thing. And, you know, AI has been this big beast that people are alternately extremely excited about or terrified of. And automation sort of falls into that camp. There's a lot of AI involved in automation technologies, right? But, you know, in that time, it's interesting you say that the process has remained the same, because one would think that your role would change completely, or maybe the look of the staff changes completely, or what they do changes completely. I mean, have you seen jobs sort of evaporate away as the new technologies have emerged? Or is it still kind of the same, but maybe just a little bit easier and more efficient?
I think it's a little bit of both, but you can navigate what your job will be. Because if you're looking at an automated workflow, you are removing components that are kind of administrative tasks or data entry and different things like that. But as a designer, you can say, how can we reassign the person who used to do this task to do something that's more effective for the overall process? You're really kind of leveling people up. You're encouraging them and you're challenging them to do something greater than they did before, because a lot of our time as legal professionals and as professionals as a whole is the manual process, right? And the data entry. And there's ways that you can interject technology just to allow you to work more efficiently. And I think that's the important part of that. So I don't think our jobs will go away. I think our jobs and what we do will just change. You just have to change with that too, though. It's part of the growing industry. AI is, you know, it did kind of come in like a bull in a china shop when it hit the industry, and it shook up a lot of people, whether that's legal professionals, secretaries, or attorneys, but it's really just changing and evolving with the industry as we grow. It's the same thing from going to paper to computers and letters to emails. We have to grow and change as with an evolving industry.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that's your perspective, because I share that approach as well. And I've done some personal research along this topic. I've been writing about it for a long time, but thinking about my own job and what I always do. And, you know, of course, as someone who writes all the time, the idea that AI can write an article, I scoff at it initially. You know, it's like, it can't do what I do. And it'll never replace me. I'm irreplaceable. I'm far too creative and interesting and brilliant. But the truth is, of course, somewhere in the middle, right? Where, you know, my sense is that people like me will become more editors than writers. And it's just like, just give me something to start with, you know, GPT, and let me go in there and then use my skill to craft something out of this and get rid of the parts that you've hallucinated or that don't make any sense or are a little bit incorrect, or whatever the case may be. And then that's where I apply my skills. Because I can tell you, as someone who's made a career of writing and editing, most people are terrible at writing. So the wordsmithing part, most people are just very bad at it. And obviating that hurdle for some people, you know, showing up with an idea and some parameters and just asking a tool to kind of get you going is actually kind of sounds nice. I can certainly save a lot of my own time doing that.
It's definitely nice to have that human element, though, because I'm sure like the articles that you write wouldn't be assessed without your touch, right? Because people connect with the author as well. And as powerful as AI can be, it doesn't have that personal connection that we do. So,
right. Exactly. It can copy our voice, which I have mixed feelings about that. But one of the things, I got a great piece of advice when I was first researching AI as a journalist a few years ago, and someone gave me this great kind of frame of reference, which is, you know, the most advanced AI in the world is like automated driving, right? There's so many technologies involved to getting a car to move safely down the street on its own. And he was like, but it can't tell a joke. It can't tie shoes. It can't make a cup of coffee. There's a million things it can't do that, you know, any human five-year-old can pick up pretty quickly. And the main thing is that it's not creative, right? It prompts, but it doesn't create anything. It just takes what was already there and takes a spin on it. And so kind of to your point, right? There's an identity there and a voice and a human touch that really just never goes away.
Right.
We've rabbit trailed a little bit. I didn't mean to dive too far into that. But back to the legal profession and AI and automation, you know, what are the biggest challenges for you in your work these days? And maybe there's an interesting answer here compared to 2008. I don't know.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin's process experience platform seamlessly wraps around existing policies and systems, allowing internal service teams to do more with what they already have. Build process experiences that are personalized for each requester and use AI to automate the intake, triage, and resolution of every request. Maximize adoption, compliance, and efficiency with no change management and no code.
I would say the biggest challenge is kind of twofold. One being keeping up with the technology because it is so quickly moving right now and just in so many different aspects too, right? You have legal research, you have e-discovery, you have legal automation, and there's so many other components in the legal industry that it's been impacting. And so it's keeping up with the technology, how it's impacting legal safely, and also on the other side of it. In my role specifically, I'm also working with attorneys and then e-discovery specialists, and it's helping them understand that, again, this goes back to what we were talking about before, that your job is not going away. Let's talk about how you can leverage the technology to really up your skill and just provide a better work product to either the client or to the attorney. So I think that's really important, but it's also been a challenge navigating that because people have so many different perspectives on it. And we deal with, or we interact with so many different people throughout the day that it's impacting each person differently. And then every person has a different level of a skill. So it's like kind of, where do you find your value in today's world? And as it's changing and evolving in this direction, so.
It's interesting because there's so many stakeholders involved, right? And as you said, you're touching so many people all the time. So you're keeping up or trying to keep up with all the changes and the innovation. But like, what about dealing with all those people and kind of keeping the education going? My guess is that a lot of, you know, corporate attorneys are not plugged in at all to technological changes. They've got other things to worry about. So you have education gap you have to work on as well, right?
Yes. It's probably one of my favorite components of my job is to educate attorneys and just to kind of lift them up and make them shine. And whether that be attorneys or legal professionals, because I get to work with them and allow them to do their job and just come in and complement their job. They have a lot on their plate. My job is to help them to understand the technology and then provide them with the information, the education, and the resources in order for them to be successful.
So, and in your experience, have you found any pushback to that or roadblocks?
Oh my gosh, the resistance to change is always a challenging thing, whether it be now or back in 2008 or back in 2003 when we really shifted to a more electronic state working in legal. The resistance to change will always be here, I feel like. It's just how you navigate that and doing it with compassion, empathy, and patience. You really have to understand the old school way of doing it. People, you know, shifting from Word perfect to Word with a big challenge. People shifting from drafting a letter on a piece of paper and mailing it to an email was a big challenge. I mean, those sound so small looking back, but there were really impacts and disruptors in the industry that we had to overcome. And it's just really how you aid and support someone through that change that'll be important.
Is there any new emerging technology or tool that you're particularly excited about right now?
One of my favorites, I'll mention too, one of my favorites is Joseph. They were one of the first that I was looking at for no code, low code platform that I just saw really come into an industry that could change a lot of the customers that I was working with previously and how they, you know, manage their workflows, how they do contract reviews, new matter intake, questionnaires from their clients or customers. And it was a solution that could be really tweaked and managed in multiple ways to provide a solid solution. So I had a lot of fun researching that tool. The thought that goes into that platform from the folks at Joseph that I've spoken with and that I've connected with, a lot of the times the tech that I would recommend and the tech that I get interested in a lot of the time has to do with the people as well. It's the underlining ideas that they have and really the thought and care that they put into making a product for the consumer. Because I feel like there's some technology out there that's just put together and, you know, delivered, whereas other tech really has that care and personal touch behind it. And that's very important to me as well, is that they care about their consumers. So Joseph was one of them, and they have just been evolving with all of the changes. And that's been exciting to see. The other thing was SharePoint. When SharePoint has grown over time from 2003 to 2008, all the different iterations and versions they've had, I really thought that it was going to just be a stalemate and that platform was just going to like die off on the side after Microsoft purchased it. And what they did though is, and I'm so happy to see this too, they really took that platform and built it into something that is extremely powerful with all the consumers who utilize Microsoft 365 to have a platform that's built in and that's primarily free of charge, depending on what level that you purchase. They built in the automated workflows, the Power Automate and then Power Flow. And you can really do it out of the box. You can build a lot of different workflows and efficiencies and build in Power BI and just connect a lot of your systems with utilizing it. So I was really excited to see where Microsoft went with their product and how much they've developed it over the time. So that's been really great to see.
That's great. Well, I want to pick up one thing that you'd mentioned too, just the human aspect of a tool or a team, whatever the case may be. That's one of Tonkin's big things. One of our big things is really human design. You know, a lot of times what gets lost in some of these tools is they're designed in a certain way that for sure will work, but actual human beings don't necessarily use them that way. And so you have to take a step back and think about the user experience, you know, and even sort of a lowest common denominator user experience, right? Like if it's a tool that only people a certain level or a certain type of training will interface with ever, that's one thing. But when you have like requesters, like with intake, right? It's got to be super easy to use. It has to be intuitive. Or the line that we use a lot, that I use a lot, is like, it needs to be easier to use than not, kind of a thing. And really great AI, in my opinion, emphasizes the humanity, right? It takes away the grindy parts that make you feel like not very human when you're doing that, like the tedious manual work, and gives you the chance to, you know, be creative and interesting and innovative and bring all the creativity.
And it makes it fun. It makes your job fun too. Like there's so many processes that you can create. And like you had said, when there's the other people who touch the platform that may not be involved in the process, and those are the most important people, because what information are they receiving and what information do they give out? And if you don't speak to each of the parties involved in the process, that's an entry point to failure, right? Because they don't want to adopt to it because it doesn't work for them. It may work for someone on a higher level, but it doesn't work for them and their job in order to push the ball from A to Z. So that's really important as well, but it also makes their job fun. And that's what we want to show as well, is we're introducing this technology in order not only to drive efficiency in your life, but to bring a little new fun tech into your process as well. So
that's great. Well, I think it flows into the boilerplate questions, which is, what's the best advice that you've received in your career?
To listen and to ask questions. I've learned a ton from listening, just being in the room with brilliant people. I find it a lot of fun just to sit and listen to conversations and their advice. And I learn a lot from that. And then the other thing is to ask questions. One of my previous mentors and current mentors had told me, Nicole, if you already know the answer to it, ask the question, because you may get a different response, or you may prompt a response that you didn't know a certain component to it. And I have learned so much through that. And I also challenge the people that I work with, because I already know the answer and they're asking me a question. But if I'm asking them the question, it's driving them to come up with their own solution, and or it's driving them to come up with their own, you know, answer. And that's what you want them to do as well, because they're going to learn more through that process, just the same way that I did. So listening and asking questions would be the two things that I would say.
I love that anecdote, because I had similar experiences as a journalist. I remember distinctly one time we were at a trade show and I had a really young reporter with me. We were in some, you know, a suite or a booth or something, and they were showing us a new product. And I was just sort of asking every single question, and I could feel him getting really impatient and trying to jump in. I kind of kept like pushing him off. And we left, and he was like, "What was that about?" He's like, "I already know all that information." And I was like, "I know, but I wanted to hear what they would say." Yeah, because you learn a lot from that answer. It's like, do they know what they're talking about? Are they going to give me a new piece of information? Is there something I don't know that, even though I think I know? I love that anecdote. It's a great technique. I highly endorse listening and asking questions. And well, and then finally, is there anything you want to promote or share about yourself or your company? And if people want to contact you, what's the best way to do that?
Best way to contact me would be probably through LinkedIn. You can always send me a direct message. Again, my passion is helping the legal industry and helping them glow. That's kind of my tagline. I like to, you know, lift people up, make them shine. And so if there's any way that I can assist in doing that, whether that be through education or discussion, I am totally open to that. So you can please send me a direct message. I would be open to any of the discussions.
That's great. Nicole Taneo, thank you so much for your time and expertise today.
Thank you, Seth.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/MBOpod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.